From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the 1st of October, and that means there's an Oktoberfest happening everywhere. The Packers are home with the Steelers this Sunday afternoon, and the Brewers are on the West Coast this weekend with the Dodgers. According to a new international research study, people with high consumption of dairy fat, like ice cream, have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. It sounds to me like this study was done in a Cop's Custard parking lot. In Portugal, it's so hot.
How hot is it?
Thank you. It's so hot. Grape pickers at the local vineyards pick grapes in the nude. You'd think a little modesty would dictate at least a couple of grape leaves. A Danish artist was paid $84,000 by the Museum of Modern Art in Denmark. What he delivered was two blank canvases titled, "Take the Money and Run." A car parked at a Chautauqua, Wisconsin restaurant was vandalized. Reportedly, someone covered the car with cheese slices. Yep, only in Wisconsin. And finally, our goofy headline of the week comes from Turkey. Missing drunk man spent hours helping a search party look for himself. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, we gave up a little bit of money this week. NASDAQ sold off, losing 3.2%, shedding 481 points. That's a lot to close at 14,567. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 lost 2.2% this week, shedding 98 points to close at 4,357. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 471 points this week, losing 1.4%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 34,327. A lot to talk about this week, Kyle. You know, let's start with the fact that the month that just ended was the worst in a year and a half, but year to date, we're still up 15%.
Yeah, hard to be too disappointed. We've strung together now 7 out of the first 9 months of the year as positive months for the S&P 500. And I think as we look at really just how good of a run it's been for stocks, not all that surprised that we gave a little back. It's certainly a conversation that we've been having really since the middle of summer that this kind of thing was likely. I think, you know, concerning just how significant some of that sell-off was, concerning that it feels like we might still be in the middle of some of it when you look at some of the stuff that happened this week. But, you know, again, I think in the broader context of what's been going on really since the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, it's been an encouraging return market overall for stocks. And I think when you look at just how broad-based participation had been in the rally, you know, not a huge surprise that we've given a little bit back.
Dave, I see that the yield on the 10-year Treasury has now fallen below 1.5%. The markets got pretty excited early in the week when the 10-year went above 1.5%, first time since last January. And I tell you all this by way of getting into the subject of inflation. You know, for much of the year, a lot of economists and analysts were of the opinion that it would be transitory, meaning it wasn't going to last long. Jay Powell, the head of the Fed last week, testimony in front of Congress, said he still thinks that inflation numbers are going to come down, although it stayed up there a little bit longer than he thought. So I don't know that we fully have a handle on the direction of inflation. It is lasting a while now. But the consensus still seems to be that inflation is going to head back down to the 2% mark that we had as the Fed target for most of the last 10 years.
It's been an interesting stretch, Bob. I think when you look at a lot of the factors that are going into the inflation push at this point, some of them you can definitely point to transitory types, things that were caused by the pandemic when it looked at supply chain problems and some of the chip shortages. You know, things like increased wages have a tendency to be a little tougher to get back. You know, you give somebody a $2 an hour raise, it's pretty tough to go back to them in a couple of months and take it away. So there will be some of that stuff, I think, that'll be a little bit more long-lasting. But it's put the Fed in a tough spot. I mean, typically, you don't see, you know, inflation going the way it's going and then have less than full employment in an economy. So they're kind of stuck in a situation where they can't just cure both of them with interest rate movements, one of their major tools in their toolbox. So it's going to be, I think, one of the more interesting stories as we finish this year to see if we can get a better handle on where that inflation situation is headed.
Yeah, my best guess is that the inflation numbers are going to come down. You know, they've remained stubbornly high because of supply chain disruptions. We read yesterday in the Wall Street Journal that they don't think the problems for the car makers are going to go away anytime soon because of the chip shortages there. Supply chain disruptions with home building is well known. But, you know, you look forward into next year, perhaps even later next year, it's hard to imagine inflation remaining as high as it is now. And, you know, folks, this is important for investors. It is about interest rates and earnings, and interest rates are driven oftentimes by underlying inflation rates. And I would concede that it's difficult to forecast inflation in the circumstances that we're experiencing now. I mean, it's not like we can dust off the playbook and say, hey, the last four times COVID happened, this, and this happened afterwards. And here was the average inflation rate, 12 months, 24 months, so on down the road. But let's hope that we've seen the worst of it. Paige, I want to ask you and talk just briefly about Evergrande and China. Evergrande, of course, the big property developer in China. They missed a bond payment, as you know, recently. You know, and Paige, it strikes me that they may be able to contain the problems of Evergrande, but it's masking, I think, the bigger news in China, which is that the Chinese economy is slowing. You know, for years I've said that the U.S. has never had a recession that started outside the U.S., and if I were to guess this next one, it might be different.
Yeah, so when it comes to China, I think, you know, the biggest thing to remember is that it's not a surprise that the numbers coming out of China have been inflated over the past 10, 15, 20 years. You've heard stories about the highways to nowhere and just the huge, huge levels of expansion within these cities or sort of sub-cities, if you will. And I think Evergrande is a big example of that happening. They built a lot of apartment towers, a lot of office towers that were never actually occupied. And we're seeing that play out now in the real numbers. We've finally gotten to that point where they can no longer really mask the fact that they were artificially inflating their economy. And the big thing to remember is, like you said, it is something that can ripple outside of China. But Evergrande itself is not the large issue. It's the entire economy of China and how it processes and how they do things. And we have to remember that it is a communist state. So the government can step in at any time and do what it is that they want to do. And so I think the fact that Evergrande did default on their debt, for all intents and purposes, is a huge sign that the Chinese government is taking a different stance. Because, like I said, they could have stepped in and stopped it and made changes. And they're going to let it happen and just sort of see what that fallout might be. So I think longer term, obviously, there's some concerns about that growth, especially when we're talking about the growth of cities and people moving from those rural areas to those cities. Is that going to continue? And if not, what is the impact going to be on the manufacturing sectors worldwide?
And Paige, as you know, China was also in the news this week by in declaring all crypto-related transactions illegal. I think that caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, I think cryptocurrency is obviously one of those things that is a big buzzword as of late. I know I just took a trip. We were at a wedding, and I couldn't take two steps without one of the bros asking me about cryptocurrencies and what I thought. And I think the big thing to remember is, you know, it's really not an investment. If you look at it right now, really when it comes to it, the only thing that crypto is worth is what the next person is willing to pay for it. And so ultimately, there's a lot more risk to it when it comes to regulations and what happens when it does get regulated. And ultimately, if you do consider it sort of the currency of the future and the direction that all things are going to be going in, the most important thing about a currency is that it's stable. And if you can't stabilize cryptocurrency, it's never going to work. And if it is stable, then it's no longer an upside investment for you. So I think people need to be cautious and just remember that when it comes to investments, you have to have a strategy, you have to have an end game, and you have to have a price target. And if you don't have those things with a certain security, then it's probably not something you should be investing in.
Joel, let's bring you into the program. As you know, orders for durable goods hit a record, according to the Commerce Department.
That's right, Bob. They've been up 15 out of the last 16 months, and that's through August. And, you know, that's, as you mentioned, the supply chain problems. That's manufacturing is one place we're seeing that, and construction is another place we're seeing that, where, you know, we've got these two things going on. We've got pent-up demand from the pandemic, and we've got, you know, all these sorts of bottlenecks that are occurring, you know, whether it's lumber for construction or manpower for almost everything. The other news that we had this week on manufacturing besides durable goods was today we had numbers from the Institute for Supply Management, and they said that they're expanding, and it's kind of an interesting situation because they're at the same time they're saying that they're doing very well, they're complaining how difficult it is to keep doing well because they have more demand than they can satisfy, and they're concerned about all of those different constraints from, you know, supplies and materials and people to staff the jobs.
Joel, I spoke earlier today with a UW-Madison professor, expert on real estate investment trust. And we were talking about a number of things, but one was this idea that, you know, warehouse space is in such strong demand, it could potentially be driving the durable goods issue, and that a lot of companies learned the hard way this last year to not embrace just-in-time inventory control, and that all sorts of companies, in his opinion, were going to be pretty convinced that they're going to need to restock their shelves a little bit deeper, a little bit higher than the just-in-time inventory folks had preached for decades, you know, until COVID came along, and how inventory rebuilding can potentially have a huge positive impact on the economy, thinking about, you know, all the production that's required to rebuild inventory, you know, at a time when our economy is coming off the sugar high of stimulus spending, and, you know, we need to take another step forward, and it's interesting in how that might help provide it.
And Bob, that illustrates what you were saying before about how inflation might be transitory. That, I mean, for now, all of these companies are demanding, you know, these materials and whatnot, and over time, yeah, that's gonna catch up. But they're gonna figure out how to have the materials and how to have the tools and all the things that they need to fill their pipeline, and, you know, the just-in-time manufacturing sort of, you know, bottled that up, and long-term fixing that's going to help the economy.
And Joel, what I think is so interesting about this is that consumers seem to have figured this out as well. If you look at the Kelley Blue Book survey that came out on car buyers this week, they said 48% of purchasers are looking now to delay car purchases. And of that 48%, 40% are looking at 7 months or more before they'll be ready to buy now. And so I think what consumers are realizing is that these are hopefully short-term bottlenecks, that as we start to get inventory build again in things like cars and things like the pieces that go into building cars, it should make finding what you want at a price that's reasonable a little bit easier down the road. And, you know, what we typically see in inflationary cycles is consumers that are trying to get ahead of inflation, right? They accelerate purchases, which leads to this vicious cycle where demand is so high that supply can't keep up and it pushes prices higher just because of that demand. I think this may be the reverse in that consumers have been willing to wait, especially when it comes to things like cars, especially when it comes to some of those bigger purchases.
Kyle, there was a survey released today by the University of Michigan looking at consumer sentiment, and one of the things that the economist there said was, he called it continuation of depressed optimism. And that's sort of what hitting at what you're talking about, where consumers have this pent-up demand to buy things, but you know, whether it's people talking about transitory inflation, managing their expectations, but they're saying, okay, I can wait a little bit.
And you know, what's really important about that is that those decisions that those consumers can put off, that's discretionary spending, right? It isn't, we're not getting hit as hard in some of the areas that you can't go out, like food and healthcare, where you can't decide, I'm going to delay that purchase because I need it today. So to your point, Kyle, and Bob, to yours about rebuilding the inventories, you know, hopefully we see this as a way to extend this rally in the economic growth cycle that we're in by pushing some of this demand down the road and allowing businesses to catch up with their inventories, but still have a strong consumer that's out there buying the stuff.
Kyle, stocks were down 4.8% for the month of September. Pretty ugly month. Clients are going to be getting their statements sometime later next week in the mail or in their inbox. And, you know, I think it's important to put the markets in perspective. About all of us invest for the long term. Long term doesn't mean between now and the holidays. It kind of means for the rest of our lives, in my opinion. And it's important to not look at month to month, of course. It's important to look at sweeps of history when you judge performance. And as I mentioned at the open, you know, we're still way up for the year. But it's important to, you know, make sure your account's properly balanced. So let's make sure that you're not overweight any particular area.
Yeah, I think let's just put September in perspective here a bit, right? That it didn't really matter where you looked. You were going to have lost a little bit of money in your account. I don't want to discount that fact because that's real money for a lot of people. I think the other side of that, of course, is that perhaps we'd gotten a little too far ahead of ourselves. We talk quite a bit, you know, on this show, I talk quite a bit to clients about this idea of high watermarking our accounts, right? That you don't get to look at an account balance at the end of August 31st and go, this is the right number, and then at September 30th be disappointed that it wasn't quite that number anymore. I think you try to smooth out your expectations a bit and understand that maybe the August number was a little bit higher than it should have been. Maybe the September number is a little lower than it should be. And so as we start to balance that out, I think as you have that longer-term perspective that you talked about, Bob, I think that's when you start to get this idea that, okay, we're going to be a little bit ahead, we're going to be a little bit behind from time to time, but if we give things enough time to come back to where they're supposed to be, with stocks, we know that at least historically, they find ways to make money long-term, that we have seen impressive growth in earnings, we've seen stock prices largely mirror that impressive growth in earnings. And so I think, you know, again, there's this tendency to want to look at this single month and go, well, things are horrible. There's this tendency to want to look at the month before and go, look how great they were. I think, you know, just important to remember that the reality probably falls somewhere in between.
Dave, any final thoughts?
Bob, I think we kind of summed it up here. And your point about earnings and interest rates is the one I think you really got to keep your eyes on. And we got a really strong forecast here for Q3 earnings. Right now, consensus about 29% over year over year. And a lot of people thinking that's likely low. So that'll be helpful. And it looks, to your point earlier, that interest rates settling in a little bit since the Fed announced their plans to possibly taper. So,
Paige, final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, just the one thing to point out, kind of building a little bit on what Dave and Kyle said, is it's really easy to get caught up in that headline risk. You know, so you read that top line article on the newspaper or on the website and think that that's going to be the driving force going forward. But, you know, looking at this last week especially, I could look at five different publications and each one is going to say a different reason for why the market was going down. And so it's just important to remember not to get too caught up in that noise. And like like Kyle said, just continue to focus on the long term, rebalance when you need to, and ultimately that's what's going to keep you out of trouble.
Well, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.